2013 and 2014 Kia NBA Most Valuable Player. Just in case you haven't heard who won that award, and I'm sure most of us have here living in Oklahoma, it was Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was his first MVP award after capturing his fourth scoring title in five seasons. If you haven't done so, I would encourage you to watch Kevin Durant's acceptance speech for receiving the MVP award. It was tremendous. I mean, he's a total class act. Most humble guy that you will ever meet. He loves the Lord and gives God the glory for his life and talent as a basketball player. From what I've heard, those who run into him on the street down in Oklahoma City or in one of the stores, they say that he always has a smile on his face and that he will greet you. And he's a very sincere individual. I don't know if you know this or not, but he worships at Life Church down in Oklahoma City. I've been told that they let him into church through a side entrance so that he and his family can worship in privacy, as you would hope he could. But after church, he always leaves through the front door. And as a result, he's there to greet people. And he does so with a smile, with his Bible in hand, and he's just a wonderful guy. Again, I say that he's a real deal. He's a man's man. A great basketball player, a great leader, and an unabashed Christian. Now, getting back to his acceptance speech, it was wonderful for a number of reasons. Number one, he didn't talk about himself and his accomplishments, as most of these guys do. Instead, he gave credit, again, to God, and he gave credit to his teammates. Plus, in admitting his love for the game of basketball, he showed his wisdom when he said basketball is just a platform to inspire others. What a statement. What a wise individual that is to recognize that basketball is just a platform to inspire others. But probably the most moving part of his acceptance speech was the tribute that he made to his mother. We're going to watch it right now, and you might want to grab some tissue, because I'm telling you, by the time it's done, you're going to be in tears. So go ahead, Matt, and turn it on.
And last, my mom. I don't think you know what you did. You had my brother when you were 18 years old. 3 years later, I came out. We were stacked, the odds were stacked against us. Single parent with two boys by the time we were 21 years old. Everybody told us we weren't supposed to be here. We moved from apartment to apartment by ourselves. One of the best memories I had is when we moved into our first apartment. No bed, no furniture, and we just all sat in the living room and just hugged each other. Because we thought we made it. And when something good happens to you, I don't know about you guys, but I tend to look back to what brought me here. And you wake me up in the middle of the night in the summer times, making me run up a hill, making me do push-ups, screaming at me from the sideline of my games at 8 or 9 years old. We wasn't supposed to be here. You made us believe. You kept us off the street, put clothes on our backs, food on the table. When you didn't eat, you made sure we ate. You went to sleep hungry. You sacrificed for us. You're the real MVP.
there's a guy that gets it. There's a guy that understands. There's a guy who said what most of us men feel when we think about the most important woman in our lives next to our wives, and that is our mother. Doesn't matter if we're young or we're old, our mother, the real MVP. And how true that is. You know, this reminds me of the story I've told before some years ago. Some of you may remember it. Others of you have not heard this story. It's about a young pastor who was shocked to hear a well-known evangelist say in a public setting, I have spent some of the happiest moments of my life in the arms of another man's wife. Yes, I've spent some of the happiest moments of my life in the arms of another woman. And then after a few moments' pause, the evangelist added, that woman was my mother. Well, sitting there was this pastor who heard this, and he says, man, I got to use that. I mean, this is just great. I got to use this in one of my sermons. And so the day came when he was preaching, and he said, this is the time I'm going to use this as he's preaching. And so with a big grin on his face, he said, I've spent some of the happiest days of my life in the arms of another woman. Or arms of another man's wife. Excuse me, no wonder you laughed there. Sorry about that. Oh, boy, yeah. Obviously misspoke there. Happiest days of my life in the arms of another man's wife. And then when he looked out and saw the shock of the people in his congregation, the look on their face, he got flustered. And he lost his train of thought. And he stood there for a moment, and then he sheepishly said, and for the life of me, I can't remember who she was. Well, today is MVP Day for mothers. It is Mother's Day. And I don't know if you know this or not, but today is the 100th anniversary of the time that President Woodrow Wilson officially made Mother's Day a holiday. It was 100 years ago that he signed that proclamation making the second Sunday of May to be observed as Mother's Day. But the truth of the matter is people have been honoring their mothers long before it became a national holiday. The following quotes will prove my point. Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, is reported to have said, all that I am or ever hope to be, I owe to my angel mother. George Washington, our country's first president, quote, my mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All I am, I owe to my mother. I attribute my success in life to the moral, intellectual, and physical education I received from her. Ralph Waldo Emerson, the American poet, gave an indirect but wonderful compliment to mothers when he said this, together is the most beautiful word in the dictionary outside of the word mother. Washington Irving, famous author of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, as well as Rip Van Winkle, is reported to have said, a mother is the truest friend we have. When trials heavy and sudden fall upon us, when adversity takes the place of prosperity, when friends desert us, when trouble thickens around us, still will she cling to us and endeavor by her kind precept and counsels to dissipate the clouds of darkness and cause peace to return to our hearts. And then just one more quote. This comes from the English poet Robert Browning. He said, motherhood, all love begins and ends there. Yes, mothers have been held in high esteem long before Mother's Day became a national holiday 100 years ago. I read this past week that during a unique exercise in a particular college, students were asked to write down their favorite word. Of the 600 words submitted, 422 were exactly the same. The word was mother. 422 out of 600 words. And then, too, I read that a medium-sized advertising company by the name of Doremus did some research where they asked CEOs which family member was most inspirational to their lives and to their careers. 64% of these famous CEOs responded with mother. Now, this past Friday, Parade magazine, in partnership with the Walmart Moms Research Project, released this year's results of their annual Mother's Day survey that was conducted through in-person interviews as well as polling 1,000 different moms across the country. And this is what this survey reveals concerning motherhood today. Some of the results I want to share with you. 56% do all or most of the parenting duties of those married or living with a partner. 56% of moms. 62% work outside the home or work from home. Of those, 69% work full-time. 58% say they are either living on the financial edge or making it but worried about what the next day will bring. 81% say being a mom is more difficult now than when they were kids. 81% say that. And I suspect that that is true. 64% say that smartphones and tablets like iPads make parents less engaged with their kids. 64% say that. Now here's some good things here. 78% eat dinner together with their kids most nights every week. That kind of surprised me right there in light of our society and how everybody's going in a million different directions. But according to this particular poll, 78% eat dinner together with their kids most nights every week. And then 77% say they feel appreciated at least half of the time by their families. At least half of the time. Now, as this survey reveals, today's mom does more than just, you know, keep the house clean and keep the kids tidy. Mothers also fill other important roles like nurses and doctors and psychologists and counselors and chauffeurs and team coaches. Furthermore, mothers are developers of personalities and molders of vocabularies and shapers of attitudes. And mothers, most important of all, I suggest to you, are often a vital link to God, causing children to know and experience firsthand the love of God in their lives. This leads me to what I would like to share this morning, this Mother's Day morning, and I want to take you to a passage in the New Testament, to the Gospel of Matthew, and introduce you to a mother whose life had eternal consequences. So open your Bibles, if you would, please, to Matthew chapter 15. And follow along with me as I begin reading in verse 21. Matthew chapter 15, beginning in verse 21. This is what we read. Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." But he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wished." And her daughter was healed at once. What a remarkable, remarkable encounter we read here. From a single encounter with Jesus, this nameless mother hears what few people have heard from the lips of Jesus: "Your faith is great." In fact, not once did Jesus say this to any of his disciples. He didn't say this to Peter. He didn't say this to John. Not to one disciple. Jesus only said this to this particular mother and as well to a Roman centurion. And both of them were Gentiles. So what made this mother's faith great in the eyes of Jesus? That's what I want us to see in the time that remains, because a mother with great faith will have a lasting impact upon her children as well as this world. Now, as we look at this passage, I want to begin with a sort of a disclaimer. Now, the disclaimer is simply this. Although I am talking specifically to moms this morning, I don't want the rest of you, and I'm thinking primarily of us guys, I don't want you to turn your ears off. I want you to pay attention, because there is something here for everyone to learn, whether you are a mother or not. All of us should desire to manifest a similar kind of faith in our lives. Now, with this in mind, let's turn our attention to this passage. Again, we're looking at what contributed to this mother possessing great faith. Look first at verse 21, which tells us where this event took place. We read there again, Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. Now, this particular district was somewhat out of the way from where Jesus normally ministered. It was located in what today is known as Lebanon. So Jesus actually went up from Israel into the country of Lebanon. Now, why did Jesus and his disciples go there? Two reasons might be suggested. The first is that rapidly mounting pressures made it necessary for Jesus to leave. He was under pressure, first of all, from the multitudes who followed him from place to place and were convinced that he was the long-awaited, long-expected Messiah. Now, they came to that conclusion after Jesus ended up feeding them, so they were following him for the wrong reasons. And second, Jesus was under pressure of possible arrest and execution by Herod and Antipas, who thought that he was John the Baptist come back from the dead. And so Herod was after Jesus as well. But the greatest pressure, however, was from the Jewish religious leaders, who increasingly wanted Jesus put to death. So this threefold pressure forced Jesus at this particular time during his public ministry to retreat. But Jesus also withdrew to Tyre and Sidon in order to gain some time alone with his disciples. He tried this earlier, but the crowds prevented this from happening. Besides needing the rest, Jesus wanted time to further prepare his disciples for his soon departure. But as Mark's gospel account of this particular event tells us, and I quote, he wanted no one to know of it, that is, that he was in that district, yet he could not escape notice. Now, in verse 22, we are introduced to the main character, the mother, and the first reason why this mother had great faith. It was because she crossed great barriers to be with Jesus. She crossed great barriers to be with Jesus. Now, exactly what barriers did this mother cross in order to be with Jesus? To begin with, there was the sex barrier. She was a woman, and society back then, it favored the male species more than it did the female species. Also, most Jewish rabbis, which Jesus was, paid little attention to women. And so that was an issue that she had to deal with. A second barrier that she overcame was the race barrier. She was a Canaanite, meaning, suggesting, that she was a Gentile. You see, back then, the Jews and the Gentiles did not have any contact socially because the Jews viewed the Gentiles as nothing more than dogs. And this will come out in this particular passage. Third, there was the religious barrier. Being a Canaanite suggests that she was probably a worshiper of false gods, false pagan deities. You see, this race of people descended through Noah, through Ham, to Canaan, and over time, the Canaanites, as they were called, developed a false religion that involved the wicked and immoral worship of pagan gods like Baal. It was because of their false religion that the Canaanites became a despised people in the eyes of God, and if you recall, he instructed the Israelites to do away with them, to exterminate them from the land, but they didn't, in disobedience to God. And of course, they ended up plaguing the people of God ever since then. Finally, there was a social barrier that this mother faced. Her daughter was cruelly demon-possessed, according to her own words. Of course, this made the mother and her daughter social outcasts. I mean, who would want to associate with a known demoniac? I mean, would you? Would you want to hang around with someone like that? Especially because this girl was cruelly demon-possessed, this suggesting that she manifested some of the more destructive signs of demon possession. Now, how this particular girl became demon-possessed, we are not told in this passage or anywhere in the New Testament, in the Gospel accounts. Maybe it was because someone in her family had once dabbled in Baal worship and Satan seized the initiative by entering this particular girl's life. Perhaps her own mother was responsible for her condition. Perhaps her mother did something in her life that invited demonic activity to be visited upon her own daughter. Well, however it happened, we don't know, but this daughter, of course, was in a very terrible way. By the way, I don't know if you heard this or not, but Harvard University has given permission for a black mass to take place on campus this coming Monday night. Have anybody seen this? I've been following this story. The university has given permission to the Harvard Extension Cultural Studies, under the guise of, you know, cultural sensitivity, cultural awareness, to invite the Satanic Temple from New York City to come and conduct a black mass on the campus of Harvard University. And it's going to take place this coming Monday night. And if you don't know what a black mass is, it's essentially it's nothing more than a satanic worship service. If I attended Harvard, I wouldn't be on campus Monday night as a believer. I'd be far away from that place because of the evil that will be released through this black mass. As the Archdiocese of Boston has correctly warned publicly, and I quote, "It places participants dangerously close to destructive works of evil." Oh, how true that is. My friends, all of this to say, never forget that Satan is alive and well on planet Earth, my friends, and he has tremendous power in this world, like possessing and controlling people like this poor daughter. So putting this together, there were many barriers in this mother's way. It was not an easy situation to be in, yet this mother would eventually triumph, as we see in this story, because of her great faith. As verse 22 reveals, she was a mother who was prepared to cross whatever barrier was necessary in order to see Jesus. Now, what can we learn from this? It is simply this, that faith will cross any barrier to be with Jesus. What barriers do mothers of today face? A couple come to mind. One is the time barrier. You know, godly mothers will find the time in their lives to pay attention to the spiritual. You know, this is especially important when our lives are filled with so many activities today. Mothers today have so many demands placed upon them that it's hard to find time for God. But a mother of faith will find that time. She will carve out a few minutes, if necessary, every day to spend time alone with the Lord. Another barrier is the cultural barrier. You know, without a doubt, society's view of motherhood is changing. Some are even questioning whether moms are necessary today. And of course, you know, the gay marriage issue has done that. And so there are people thinking that moms are not important anymore. But motherhood is important. We know that. So don't let that dissuade you from making motherhood your highest priority in your life if God has given you children. Well, let's move on. This mother was signaled out by Jesus as having great faith, not only because she crossed great barriers to be with Jesus, but also because she continued to reach out to Jesus in spite of obstacles. Look at this. What obstacles came into this mother's life after making contact with Jesus? Well, I see three particular obstacles. The first obstacle was the silence of Jesus. After pleading with Jesus to have mercy on her, we read in verse 23, but he did not answer her a word. Now, at first, this seems rather rude, doesn't it? Why would Jesus ignore this mother's plea? I think it was for this reason. When she called him the Son of David, she was placing herself on Jewish ground. But she could not do this. Why? Because she was a Gentile. A Gentile that resided in the area of Canaan, a very hated area. So Jesus gave her the silent treatment since she came to him on Jewish terms. But of course, as we see in this particular story, he knew her heart. He knew that his silence would be no obstacle to this particular woman. The second obstacle was the uncaring attitude of the disciples. We see this in verse 23. And his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." Well, obviously they became perturbed at this mother's persistence. Her shouting got on their nerves. But instead of imploring Jesus to do the compassionate thing in order to help this poor woman, they asked him to send her away. You know, how shameful when you think about it. Instead of taking pity on this poor woman because of her daughter's condition, all they thought of at this particular time was themselves. Here they were standing next to the one of whom it was said earlier in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36, and seeing the multitudes, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and downcast like sheep without a shepherd. And so they knew this, they heard this about him, and yet the disciples could not muster up any compassion on their part. How sad. But you know, are we not guilty of this on occasion ourselves? I think we are. Instead of taking pity on people, we want to get rid of them, just like these disciples did. The third obstacle was the seemingly disinterested response of Jesus when he finally did answer her, as we see there in verse 24. But he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Now, don't take this to mean that Jesus was giving in to his disciples' recommendation to get rid of her. Instead, see here that his response essentially had twofold purpose. First, it was meant for his disciples to remind them that his primary ministry, his primary calling, was to the Jewish people. Thus, it was inappropriate for him to bring blessings to the Gentiles before blessings came to the Jewish nation. And second, our Lord responded to this woman as he did, not to destroy her faith, but in order to develop it. Scottish Presbyterian pastor Samuel Rutherford reminds us of this when he wrote, and I quote, "It is faith's work to claim and challenge loving kindness out of all the roughest strokes of God." Yes, Jesus was not attempting to shut this woman down with his seemingly disinterested response. He was not rejecting her. Instead, he was seeking to draw out of this woman a faith that would be strong. Now, I suspect most people would have given up after facing these three obstacles, but not this mother. All of these obstacles only made her persist more in asking. Look at verse 25. But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." Notice this time, though, that she avoided any use of Jewish titles. She simply came as a sinner needing help, and she offered no argument whatsoever. And Mark's account of this very same story tells us that she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. Now, the tense of the particular Greek word used here for asking implies a continual pleading to Jesus. So we can see this woman there on her knees pleading with the Lord, "Please, please help me." Now, we cannot help but admire the persistence of this mother, especially in light of the obstacles that crossed her path. Now, what was it that caused her to be so persistent in requesting Jesus to do something? I think it was three things. One was desperation. She had tried other ways and means to help her daughter, and they all failed. And so she finally realized that Jesus alone was the one that could help her daughter, and that's why she was so persistent. A second reason for her persistence was love. Love of a mother for her daughter. You know, an excavation at the ancient site of Pompeii in Italy shows the love of a mother for her children. When that city was buried by a volcano nearly 2,000 years ago, the lava encased a picture of unfailing maternal love. Intertwined together was a woman and a deformed son. And from what they could gather from just looking at this, she was evidently of noble birth and could have possibly escaped with her life, yet she chose to stay with her invalid son and hold him close until the molten earth consumed their very lives. And so, centuries later, archaeologists unearthed this beautiful sacrifice made of this one, this mother who embraced her child, and they died together. And so, I say again, I think a second reason for her persistence was love, love for her daughter. And a third reason behind her persistence was vision. This mother saw in Jesus a compassion that would not turn her away. So learn from this mother that persistence is the hallmark of great faith. So let me ask you, what is your response, moms, when you face the obstacles that you do when it comes to motherhood? Obstacles like when your husband or your children take you for granted, or when your child's heart is cold toward God and toward spiritual things, or when you face criticism from others for making a decision about your children that others disagree with. What do you do? A mother with great faith will keep reaching out to Jesus no matter the obstacles. Well, there's one more reason why this mother was commended by Jesus for having great faith, and that was because she confessed belief in the ability of Jesus to help her. She confessed belief in the ability of Jesus to help her. Look at what happens next in verse 26. And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Now, what is Jesus saying here? Well, picking up with the theme of "to the Jew first," which he announced back in verse 24, Jesus uses a common illustration to skillfully help this woman to understand her position. So the children referred to the people of Israel, the Jewish people, and the reference to the dogs refers to the Gentiles. But understand here, and this is very important to understand this, that Jesus used a Greek word that meant a little pet dog. Something that most of us have in our homes. Not the word used by Jews when speaking of Gentiles, which meant, you know, the vicious mongrels that ran in packs and that lived, you know, largely off of garbage and the carcasses of other dead animals. You know, what comes to my mind, and there's a couple of us here, Dale, he's already shaking his head, and Alan's downstairs doing children's church. We've been to Fiji, and we've seen those dogs, and we heard them at night, didn't we, Dale? I mean, these dogs, I mean, they were vicious and ugly, and some of them were, you know, missing parts of their body. You see them during the day, they might have a leg missing or something. These are the sorts of dogs you're not going to take into your house at all. And so that came to my mind in thinking about this. So again, don't see Jesus here as trying to make the situation more difficult for the woman. He's not playing games with her, not at all. He's drawing out of her a growing faith. And notice her response in verse 27. It's remarkable. But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." One commentator paraphrased her answer this way, and I want to quote, "It is true that we Gentiles do not sit at the table as children and eat the bread, but even the pet dogs under the table can eat some of the crumbs." Oh, what a response. What a tremendous response this is. What does her response to Jesus tell us about this woman. It tells us that she understood her position and that she did not want to deprive Israel of God's special blessings, but instead she was simply asking that some of those blessings could be extended to her and her daughter. In other words, this mother confessed belief in the ability of Jesus to help her. And in light of this, no wonder Jesus announces he did there in verse 28, "O woman, your faith is great." And because of her great faith, Jesus essentially gave her a blank check, so to speak, and told her to fill in the amount when he said, "It shall be done for you as you wish." And because of her faith and Jesus' ability to help, we read at the end of verse 28, "And her daughter was healed at once." Learn here, mothers, that you never make a mistake by trusting in the Lord. Because this mother confessed belief in the ability of Jesus to help her, that help came when needed. And so, do you have belief in Jesus' ability to help you when it comes to your responsibilities of motherhood? And I know they're great, because I know what my wife has had to deal with throughout all these years, 39 years of being a mom. It's not always easy. Sometimes it's very, very difficult. But you need to keep your eyes upon the Lord at all times. You need to believe in Jesus' ability to help. And when you do, even the seemingly impossible can be done. So what caused Jesus to commend this woman for her great faith? Three things. She crossed great barriers to be with Jesus. She continued to reach out to Jesus in spite of the obstacles that continue to be in her way. And she confessed belief in the ability of Jesus to help her. So moms, learn from this unnamed mother. Like her, make knowing Jesus a priority in your life. Keep reaching out to him, no matter the obstacles that you're dealing with in your life, and trust his ability to help you always, because he will be there. It may not be immediate, but he still will help you as you deal with the issues of motherhood. Let's close in prayer.